Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 20th chapter. Lord Vishnu's appearance in the sacrificial arena. Text 13. Samaha. By His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. My dear heroic king, please keep yourself always equipoised and treat people equally, whether they are greater than you in the intermediate stage or lower than you. Do not be disturbed by temporary distress or happiness. Fully control your mind and senses. In this transcendental position, try to execute your duty as king in whatever condition of life you may be posted by my arrangement. For your only duty here is to give protection to the citizens of your kingdom. Please repeat after me. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Here is an example of receiving direct instruction from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu. One has to execute the order of Lord Vishnu, whether receiving it directly from Him or from His bona fide representative, the spiritual master. Arjuna fought the battle of Kurukshetra under the direct order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Similarly, here, Prithu Maharaj is also being given orders by the Lord regarding the execution of His duty. We have to stick to the principles stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Vyavasayatmika Buddhi. Every man's duty is to receive orders from Lord Krishna or from His bona fide representative and take these orders as his life and soul without personal considerations. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states that one should not care very much whether he is going to be liberated or not, but he should simply execute the direct order received from the spiritual master. If one sticks to the principles of abiding by the orders of the spiritual master, he will always remain in a liberated position. A common man must execute the rules and regulations of Varnashram Dharma by working in his prescribed duty according to his caste system, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. And the spiritual order system, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Banaprastha, and Sannyas. If one simply executes regularly and strictly the injunctions given for the different different divisions of life, then one satisfies Lord Vishnu. As a king, Prithu Maharaj was ordered by Lord Vishnu to keep himself always aloof from the activities of the bodily situation and to engage always in the service of the Lord, and thus keep himself in the liberated stage. The word Baddha Shaurhida in the previous verse is explained herewith. One can fully remain in intimate connection with the Supreme Lord directly or receive orders from His bona fide representative, the spiritual master, and execute the orders sincerely when one keeps aloof from the activities of the body. The Lord helps us by giving us directions how to act in devotional service and thus advance on the path back to home, back to Godhead. He instructs us outwardly in the form of the spiritual master. Therefore, one should not accept the spiritual master as an ordinary human being. The Lord says, Acharyam mam vijaniyan nava mannate karhi chit. One should not treat the spiritual master as an ordinary human being, for he is the substitute for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. 11th Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, 17th chapter, 27th verse. One should treat the spiritual master as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and never be envious of him or consider him to be an ordinary human being. If we follow the instructions of the spiritual master and execute devotional service to the Lord, we will remain always free from the contamination of bodily and material activities, and our life will be successful. So, Vishnu is instructing further to Prithu Maharaj, and here he is almost coming to a conclusion of his instructions. Still quite a few, yeah. Three more verses he spoke, but we can see that he is gradually coming to a conclusion. Like after giving various advices how a devotee should behave and what kind of qualities a devotee should develop, now here he is telling Prithu Maharaj that he is asking him to become equipoised, asking him to become equally disposed to everyone. Somebody may be superior, somebody may be equal, or somebody may be inferior. But to all, we must be equipoised. And here, of course, we have to understand that being equipoised to the seniors doesn't mean that we treat them as equal. Instead, here Vishnu is asking Prithu Maharaj to consider that everybody is a part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that is the consideration for becoming really equipoised. To become equipoised and to treat everyone in the same level as one is not the same thing. As Vaishnavas, we must follow the strict regulations of the Vaishnav etiquette. And it is always instructed that the seniors should be respected. With the equals, we should have friendship, and we must shower our affection to those who are junior to us. So this is how a Vaishnav behaves towards other Vaishnavas. Towards the superiors, respect. Towards the equals, friendship. And towards the inferiors or juniors, affection. And that is how the Vaishnav world becomes such a wonderful world. So, and equipoise means not to see any difference. Like everyone loves himself. Everyone thinks, everyone is simply concerned about his welfare. So it is a natural tendency that every living entity has. But a devotee, he sees everybody else as his self. He sees everyone as his very, very dear one, very close. And how does one develop that feeling? One develops that feeling or develops that mood by recognizing everyone as a part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are many such, many shlokas in Bhagavad Gita confirming this point. Like one shloka is, Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhukti Labhate Param. Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Na Sochati Na Kangshati Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu. So here we can see Sama, and here also Samano, the word has been used here. Samaha, Samano, Uttamo, Madhama, Dhamma. So the word is Samaha, means equal. Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu. A person who has been situated in the Brahma-Bhuta platform, he sees everyone with an equal vision. He sees everyone as non-different from his self. And that expression is called mamata, or mindness. the feeling that they are mine. Like, why does a father become so affectionate towards his son? Because the father feels that this is my son. That this feeling that this is mine is called mamata. And it is due to the mamata, as our mamata, or this feeling of heart spreads all around us towards the other living entities, we develop this equipoise. We develop the ability to look at everyone equally. So, Prabhupada is pointing out that it is very, very important to abide by the instructions of the Lord. And here, Prithu Maharaj is very fortunate, like Arjuna in the battle of Kurukshetra, to receive the knowledge directly from the Lord. But it does not really matter whether it is coming directly from the Lord or whether it is coming through some other source other than the Lord. In both cases, it is equally important because it's the same message that is conveyed. Now, sometimes we are fortunate enough to receive the message or receive the instructions from the Lord, and sometimes we are fortunate to receive the knowledge from the devotee of the Lord. But wherever it comes from, it is a sign of good fortune. So wherever we are situated, we must seek for receiving the transcendental knowledge from a bona fide source, either from the Lord or from his devotees. Now, Arjuna, I received it directly from Krishna in the battle of Kurukshetra, and that has been described. What Krishna told Arjuna has been described in Mahabharata. And that section is called the Bhagavad Gita. Actually, Bhagavad Gita is a part of Mahabharata. 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita has actually been picked up from Mahabharata. So, this way we are able to receive the knowledge even directly from the Lord. When you read Bhagavad Gita, we actually listen to the Lord. If we meditate, we can actually listen that, yes, this is Krishna who is speaking. We can even picture Krishna. We can even see Krishna in front of our eyes if we read with proper understanding. The example is the Brahmin who was reading Bhagavad Gita in Srirangakshetra in South India when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went there. That person was actually illiterate. But he was reading Bhagavad Gita, he was holding the book in front of him, and he was reading, or actually you can say trying to read, but tears were flowing from his eyes. And people were laughing at him, thinking that what's wrong with this guy? He can't even read and he's showing that such ecstasy, shedding tears. But when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw him, Mahaprabhu became curious. And Mahaprabhu asked him, "My dear sir, what appeals you so much in Bhagavad Gita that you are experiencing such ecstasy, that tears are streaming down your eyes?" So the Brahmin was very honest. The Vaishnavas are very honest. Vaishnavas are not deceptive. Vaishnavas don't lie. They simply state everything frankly. So the Brahmin replied, "Actually, sir, I can't even read. But you see, my spiritual master instructed me to read Bhagavad Gita every day. Now, abiding by the instructions of my spiritual master, every day I sit down with the Bhagavad Gita, and I try to read. But as I told you, I can't really read." But then Mahaprabhu asked, "But how did you experience such ecstasy that tears were flowing from her eyes, and there were other ecstatic symptoms were there too. Then the Brahmin admitted, said, "You see, although I can't really read, but as soon as I pick up the Bhagavad Gita, I feel that the Lord is so merciful. He's so merciful that He voluntarily became the charioteer of Arjuna in the battle of Kurukshetra. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but He became a servant of His devotee. And whenever I think of this greatness of the Lord, this magnanimous attitude of the Lord towards His devotees, then I become very much overwhelmed with emotion, and tears come streaming down my eyes." So then Mahaprabhu told him that actually you are the real reader of Bhagavad Gita. You have really understood Bhagavad Gita. Because he actually saw Krishna when he was trying to read Bhagavad Gita. So when we read Bhagavad Gita, actually we hear Krishna. We can hear Krishna. Krishna becomes manifest in front of our eyes at that time, and we can literally hear Him speak. But it does not really matter whether we are receiving the knowledge directly from Krishna or from His bona fide devotee. The effect is the same. Or as a matter of fact, when we read or when we hear Krishna's devotees speaking about Krishna's teachings, then it becomes even easier. Like we can see that the Bhagavad Gita has been sold around the world, I'm sure over millions and millions of copies before Prabhupada went to the West. But all those Bhagavad Gitas in different languages could not make a single devotee. People read Bhagavad Gita, and while reading they actually heard what Krishna said. But still, they could not become a devotee of Krishna. Great people all over the world appreciated Bhagavad Gita. There are many, many people who appreciated Bhagavad Gita. Emerson, many, George Bernard Shaw, Leo Tolstoy, Schopenhauer, all these great thinkers of the world have appreciated Bhagavad Gita. But no one could actually, in spite of their appreciation, they could not become a devotee of Krishna. But when Prabhupada, Krishna's pure devotee, came and he spoke about Bhagavad Gita or the message of Bhagavad Gita, then thousands upon thousands of people became devotees of Krishna. So there lies the importance, or this is how we can see that hearing it from Krishna's devotee is even better than hearing from directly from Krishna. Especially when we are not very elevated. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when Krishna instructs, He instructs very, His instructions are very, very elevated, very lofty. But when Krishna's devotees speak, they are very close to us. And the way they speak and the way they explain is easier for us to understand. And as a matter of fact, Krishna's devotee makes it simpler for our sake. And that's why it becomes easier to understand. So, this way we can see that to receive the knowledge from a bona fide devotee of Krishna is Very, very important. Not that everybody will be so fortunate to hear directly from Krishna. Yes, we will be fortunate when we become totally free from our material contamination. When you become free from material contamination, then we will be able to understand directly from Krishna, or we'll be able to hear Krishna directly. But till the time we are not pure, it is important that we hear from a bona fide devotee of Krishna. Because then it becomes easier. And Prabhupada is pointing out that everybody must act according to Krishna's instructions. Like just reading about Krishna's instructions or even hearing from Krishna's devotee is not enough. We have to practice what they instruct. If we read Bhagavad Gita and become convinced by Bhagavad Gita but do not act, then it is not really understanding Bhagavad Gita properly. Then you have to see, then we can see that the person did not understand Bhagavad Gita. So Prabhupada is emphasizing that point, that just don't listen or read, but act. This action is very, very important. We must act according to the instructions of Krishna. And acting according to the instructions of Krishna, according to Bhagavad Gita, means following the Varnashram. That's the very basic understanding of Bhagavad Gita, very basic teachings of Bhagavad Gita. But Prabhupada actually made it simpler, following the footsteps of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that is, Prabhupada gave the instruction that we have to simply practice the regulative principles, four regulative principles, and we must chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra every day, at least 16 rounds. So that is what Prabhupada asked us to practice. It is not possible for us to follow the instructions of Bhagavad Gita. So Prabhupada gave us the final instruction of Bhagavad Gita, that is Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mam Ekam Saranam Braja. Give up all other so-called religious activities and simply surrender unto Krishna. Then immediately you'll become free from all your material contaminations and you'll become liberated. Sarva Papebho Mokkho Ishami. So that is the assurance Krishna gave. And that assurance has been repeated by Srila Prabhupada. That assurance has been repeated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when we follow those instructions, we make some positive progress towards the spiritual path. Prabhupada also, the later part of the purport, Prabhupada is pointing out that he instructs us, Krishna instructs us outwardly in the form of the spiritual master. Therefore, one should not accept the spiritual master as an ordinary human being. It's actually a very, very important point, especially now that we are facing so many crises. When Prabhupada was here, everything was easy, because Prabhupada was such an illustrious devotee of Krishna, that when he followed him, everything became simple. There was no doubt, and Prabhupada never actually deceived us. Prabhupada never failed us. But in the recent past, there had been some accidents in our society, and spiritual masters have left the movement due to their problems. Now the question immediately arises, then what should the disciples do, those who lost their spiritual master? The thing is that we always have to have some spiritual master. We always have to have a spiritual master. The spiritual masters can be of various types. There can be Bhatma Pradarshak Guru, one who shows us the process of Krishna consciousness, brings us to the movement. Then Diksha Guru, the initiating spiritual master. And then we also have Shiksha Guru, the instructing spiritual master. So, and then we have Chaitya Guru, Krishna, who is seated in the heart as the super soul, and he is actually the ultimate guru. Who is actually, see, Krishna is the original guru, but due to our lack of understanding of Krishna, we need, or rather Krishna manifests himself in different ways to reveal himself to the devotees or to the aspiring devotees. Now, original guru, Adi Guru actually is Krishna. But when a living entity becomes sincere about Krishna consciousness, when a living entity wants to make advancement in the spiritual life, then Krishna appears externally in the form of a bona fide spiritual master. So, we have to understand that it is by Krishna's mercy that one receives a bona fide spiritual master. Now, as I mentioned, the bona fide spiritual master doesn't necessarily have to be a Diksha Guru all the time. Sometimes, we can accept Shiksha Gurus. Like sometimes when the Diksha Guru is not able to guide us further in the spiritual path, then we can accept a Shiksha Guru. And through that Shiksha Guru, we can make further advancement towards Krishna. Actually, our main concern should be how we can make advancement towards Krishna. That should be the goal. The goal is not just to become a member of ISKCON. Goal is not just to become goal is not just to be in ISKCON. ISKCON is actually a platform which makes us, which enables us to progress towards the ultimate goal. But ultimate goal actually is Krishna, and we must make advancement towards Krishna. And always we should question ourselves, how much progress did I make since yesterday? Actually, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, he instructed that on every Ekadasi, a devotee should analyze how much progress he made since last Ekadasi. That's a very good way of making advancement. We must see that we are constantly making progress. And we should consider, Bhakti Vinod Thakur is saying, that we must analyze the progress we made, evaluate the progress from Ekadasi to Ekadasi. So we must be concerned about that ultimate goal, that is Krishna. And how much progress we made towards that ultimate goal. And if we are sincere, then we will see that it is actually difficult to make progress alone. We need help. Especially we need the help from the superiors. Someone, devotees, those who are more advanced. Sajati ashaya snigdha sadhu sango shato bare. One must associate with the devotees, those who are in the same sampradaya and who is very peaceful, those who are peaceful, those who are fixed up, and those who are more advanced. So that is the instruction given in Bhagavatam about association of a sadhu. What kind of sadhu we should try to associate? We must try to associate with the sadhus, those who are of the same understanding. Like, since we are Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we should associate with the other Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And that person must be very peaceful and advanced, fixed up. And he should be more advanced than us. Because otherwise we cannot really make progress. If we are always associating with devotees, those who are less advanced, then we cannot make such steady progress. Because naturally the tendency will be to come to their level. Actually, in the way water finds its own level, the same way our consciousness also finds its own level. The water comes to an equilibrium. Like if the level of water is high, but if there is some lower level of water, then ultimately what will happen? They'll come to an equilibrium. And the higher level will come down and the lower level will rise up. Now if we're always associating with the junior devotees, then there will be a tendency to come to that equilibrium. And the lower devotees will, junior devotees obviously will make further advancement, but the senior devotees will tend to go down in their advancement. Of course, that's one consideration, but the other consideration is that knowledge is not reduced by giving. When you give knowledge to somebody, knowledge does not, the degree of knowledge does not get reduced, but knowledge is increased. Knowledge increases. Knowledge is one thing that increases by giving. When you give things to others, then it diminishes in quantity. But knowledge is one thing that as we give, it increases in quantity. But still, we must aspire for superior associations, higher associations. And that higher association, and that higher association is like the Shiksha Guru. It is not that a Shiksha Guru has to be stamped. Like Diksha Guru obviously is stamped. That yes, here is the contract. In the fire sacrifice, the contract has been made. The Guru made the contract that he will take the responsibility of disciples' spiritual progress, and the disciple also takes a vow to follow the spiritual master. But sometimes the Diksha Gurus are not capable of helping the disciples, then the disciples should look for some help around himself. Sometimes he can, actually it is even better if the Diksha Guru is present. Then the disciple asks the spiritual master if he could take the shiksha from somebody, or the spiritual master can instruct the disciples that they can take instructions from such and such persons as shiksha guru. And in our society we have to understand that all the senior, there is no such formalities. Like any senior devotee is a shiksha guru to the junior devotees. It is a spiritual society, and there is no need for so many formalities. Like in a family, we do not need so many formalities. Because in a family, because we are familiar with each other, that's why the formality is reduced. Like when you go to somebody's house, and if we are hungry, and if we want to eat, then we take the permission of the person. that, please, can I have something to eat? I'm very hungry. There may be all the food laid on the table. But still, we can't just go and sit down there. We have to ask the permission of the Lord of the house. My dear sir, I'm very hungry and I can see that you all are just about to start eating. So can I join you? You have to take a permission. But you don't take permission in your own house. In your own house, I mean, there may not be even food laid on the table. If you're hungry, you just open the fridge and pick up whatever you like to eat and start eating. So formalities are applied when there is no familiarity, no close relationship. But when there is familiarity, then the formalities are not needed. Like, I personally feel that in our society, the disciples do not need to take the permission of the Diksha Guru about taking instructions from some Shiksha Gurus of his choice. Because it's the same family. It is understood that the senior devotees will instruct the junior devotees. I personally feel that there's a lot of formalities are often imposed in order to secure the controlling power. In order to control, we impose too many formalities. Like in the past, actually it was rather unjustly proclaimed in our society that the disciples have only a relationship with the Diksha Guru and doesn't have any relationship with anybody else. And that was totally wrong. But still, the Gurus wanted to keep their disciples under their control so much so that they wouldn't allow the disciples to develop any kind of relationship with anybody else. And that's why I can see that so many Gurus of our society had so much problem in the past. Because instead of helping their disciples to progress towards Krishna, they simply wanted to control their disciples for their material or less spiritual accomplishments. So we have to be very, very careful. We must understand that this is a society of Krishna consciousness and Krishna is the ultimate goal. And we must take full advantage of everybody around us, from everyone around us, to reach that goal. Even if a new bhakta can help us get Krishna, we must take his advantage. In Krishna consciousness, there is no question of new or old. Whoever has Krishna, he is great. Jai bhaje shei boro abhaktohin char. Krishna bhajane nahi jati kuladi vichar. Whoever serves Krishna, he is great. And in Krishna consciousness, there is no consideration of caste and creed. There is no such formal understanding of great or small. Whoever is serving Krishna, the greatness is judged by the degree of attachment one has developed for Krishna. The greatness is judged by the service one is rendering to Krishna. If some neophyte devotee is rendering dedicated service to Krishna all throughout the day, he is advanced. But if a so-called senior devotee, after many years of being in the movement for many years, and after, in spite of holding a very, very big position, if he is not rendering service to Krishna and Krishna's devotees, then he is not advanced. The understanding of Krishna consciousness will be the degree of Krishna consciousness should be judged by the attachment one has developed for Krishna. So today is actually the Pakshabodhini Mahadwadasi. It's a very nice, very auspicious day. Now I also wanted to speak a little bit on that topic. Like, devotees often ask me the question that what is this Mahadwadasi? We are supposed to fast on Ekadasi. But why sometimes we do not fast on Ekadasi and fast on Dwadasi? Like yesterday was Ekadasi, but we didn't fast yesterday. We are fasting today. The Dwadasi means Ekadasi means the 11th day, and Dwadasi means the 12th day. So when in some cases we do not it is instructed that we should not fast on the Ekadasi. Instead, we should fast the following day. Fast on a Dwadasi day, and those days are known as Maha Dwadasi, Great Dwadasi, the Great 12th day. And generally, when Ekadasi overlaps Dwadasi, when the 11th day overlaps the 12th day, then it is considered to be Mahadwadasi. Now, this is also a complicated point. What is the meaning of days overlapping? The understanding is, according to Vedic calculation, the days are judged or calculated by two different calculations. One is the lunar calculation, and the other is the solar calculation. The solar calculation is when the sun rises, that's the beginning of the day, right? And the lunar calculation is according to the position of the moon. Now, the Vedic days begin according to the Gaudiya Vaishnava understanding. According to the Vaishnava understanding, the day does not actually begin with the sunrise. The day actually begins, according to Vaishnava understanding, 1 hour and 36 minutes before sunrise. It is called two muhurtas. 48 minutes make a muhurta. Like we know the Brahma muhurta. Brahma muhurta means 48 minutes before sunrise. So two muhurtas before sunrise is the time when the day begins. Of course, in the West, they have become even more for. They start their day 6 hours before the sunrise. It starts at midnight. There, in the West, the day begins at 12 o'clock midnight. But that's a completely. It's inconceivable where did they get the concept of that kind of calculation. But there's one theory. Anyway, I don't want to get into that. But Gaudiya Vaishnava calculation is that the day begins, according to the solar calculation, the day begins 1 hour 36 minutes before sunrise. And there's a lunar calculation, the movement of the moon divided by certain days, and where the way the moon goes around the earth, or I think that is the thing is, the calculation is according to the movements of the moon. And so generally the calculation of different tithis are different days are calculated according to the movement of the moon. Now accordingly we have the first day, second day, third day. This way it goes to 15th day. 15th day is the full moon, and then again it goes the 1, 2, 3, 4, and then another 15th day becomes the new moon. So this is how the days are calculated according to the movement of the moon. Now, when the 11th day, according to that lunar calculation, overlaps or enters into the 12th day, then it is considered to be viddha, or it is penetrated. Ekadashi is mixed with Dwadashi, right? So on such days when Ekadashi is mixed with Dwadashi, then with Pakshavardhini Mahadwadashi, one derives the benefit of 10,000 horse sacrifices. Completely? Yes. Yeah. Scriptural injunctions are, absolute truth. But they have to be accepted as it has been instructed. Now, another understanding is it's a totally different dimension. You see, because observing Ekadasi gives Krishna bhakti, devotion to Krishna. But these horse sacrifices and others give us material benefit. So no amount of material benefit can equal the spiritual gain that we derive by performing Ekadasi or Mahadwadasi. Actually, from that understanding, it is even more, the benefit is even more than unlimited horse sacrifices. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any question? It's actually, you have to see that ultimate spiritual master is the eternal one, who ultimately takes us back to Krishna. There will be some spiritual masters who will give us some help in the course of our advancement. And we have to accept their help with the understanding that they are actually helping us to make advancement. But the eternal relationship is with the spiritual master who is going to give us the ultimate help, like one who is going to take us by our hand and take us back to Godhead. And in between there will be Bhatma Pradarshak and, even Diksha Guru may be there, who may not be the ultimate spiritual master. The main thing is that we have to be open and take the benefit wherever it's coming from, take the help wherever it's coming from. That's quite a common question actually, because the question immediately arises. You see, naturally one questions like, what about my spiritual master? I had been and after initiation I had been told that I have an eternal relationship with him. But now that he has fallen down, what shall I do? I mean, what's to understand? So here we have to understand that he helped us, and that help is valuable. We cannot deny that help. But he is not the ultimate help that is going to take us back to Godhead. When he himself is having problems, he cannot obviously take us or help us go back to Godhead right now. But that doesn't mean that no one is going to help us or we should not take any help from anyone. That will be foolish. To think that, well, my spiritual master is gone and I should not take any help from anyone. But then again, my personal feeling is that that doesn't mean that we have to take reinitiation again. That's also, I cannot really figure out. Although in the GBC meeting we could not come to any positive conclusion last year. And some felt that reinitiation is needed, and some felt that reinitiation is not needed. Like I was speaking in favor of not taking reinitiation, because why there has to be such formality? Like devotees are advancing, and in an advanced stage they can figure out where they want to have the help from. So why everything has to have a stamp? Why can't we allow our hearts to
find its own course. So, and I think that will solve a lot of problems, because this problem, I mean, we are seeing a kind of problems that we are faced with now. Like, one guru left, their disciples were forced to take reinitiation. Then the person that took reinitiation from that guru left, now what? I mean, take another reinitiation, what if that person leaves? For how long this reinitiation business is going to go on then? So I think it would be a lot easier if we just have the understanding that this Diksha initiation is an introduction to the society. One is officially recognized as a member of ISKCON, and then afterwards, if the guru has any problem, they are already situated in the family and they already recognize, like they already got one birth. So, I mean, what is the question of having another birth to be introduced to the society? And in the society, which is a Vaishnava society, they can find some senior Vaishnava and take shelter. And let it be a spontaneous relationship, not an official relationship. Krishna consciousness ultimately is a spontaneous consideration. Love is spontaneous. And the relationship between the disciple and spiritual master is a relationship of love. The relationship between Krishna and devotees is a relationship of love. So, and love doesn't need any stamp. Love is a heart's spontaneous craving. Yeah, you have further questions? Yeah, you haven't found him because you are still in the relative platform. You see, because you are in the relative platform, that's why you haven't found him. But when you come to the absolute platform, when you come to a spiritual platform, then you'll see who that you're. Right. Right. Yeah, he'll be a specific person. And Prabhupada actually gives a hint of that in The Nature of Devotion. Prabhupada says that in order to go back to Godhead, ultimately we have to become surrendered to some inhabitant of Vrindavan. Right? And often the guru manifests himself in that as that personality. Like your original guru will be manifest as a personality who is Krishna's eternal associate in Vrindavan. Like for instance, to give a graphic example, I can say, see, Prabhupada is my spiritual master, right? And actually Prabhupada is my Diksha Guru, Shiksha Guru, Prabhupada is everything. Now, I do not know who Prabhupada is in Krishna's pastimes, right? But when I get purified and I develop my spiritual vision, then I will see Prabhupada as an associate of Krishna or as an associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in that form, Prabhupada will take me, if I become qualified someday, Prabhupada will take me to Vrindavan or spiritual sky. Like, to give an example, say Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, or Bhakti Vinod Thakur, or Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I mean, their sarup, their original form is actually known. All three of them are manjaris in Vrindavan. Now, when they take their disciples and engage them in Krishna's service, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj will come as a manjari and take him back to Godhead and engage the disciple in Krishna's service. Right? So, at that time, the guru will come in his original form. Like, Yes, it may be in this lifetime, if you are fortunate enough. If you become purified, then it may happen in this lifetime. It's a matter of our purity, you see, like how much purified we have become or we will become. And when you become pure, then the Guru will come and take us back to Godhead. That's another point. You see, it is not that we have to, in order to become liberated, we have to become free from this gross body, right? You see, gross body is kind of destined. You see, every gross body supposed to last for 100 years, right? But inside the gross body, we have a subtle body. And when we transform that subtle body into Krishna consciousness, like man mana bhava, with our mind, if we always think of Krishna, then Krishna will give us buddhi yogam. With that, our intelligence will become purified. By thinking of Krishna, our mind will get purified. By engaging in service in Krishna and using our intelligence in Krishna's service, our intelligence will get purified. And when our mind and intelligence get purified, then our ego also will get purified. Our false ego will fall off and our real identity will become manifest. So, at that time, by rendering devotional service, one can become purified inwardly, become situated in the spiritual identity, although he may be in the gross material body, which is destined to live for 100 years. Right? But although he may be in this gross body, but still, he will be spiritually situated and he will perceive Krishna's spiritual pastimes in spite of being in this body. So now when that purification takes place, then the spiritual master comes and takes him to the spiritual sky. Yeah. What includes? There are different ways of observing it, different degrees of intensity. Right? The simple way of doing it is that abstain from grains. Don't eat grains. Right? Then even more fixed up is, even more intense in degree is, do not eat before 12 o'clock. And then, even more strict is, do not eat anything till the sunset. Right? And even more strict is that eat just once. And then, even more strict is that don't eat anything. Drink something only. You can drink some milk or some fruit juice. Right? And even more strict is, don't drink anything. Don't drink milk or fruit juice. You may drink some water. But even more strict is, don't drink even water. And even more strict is that chant 64 rounds. And then even more strict is, don't sleep the whole night. So it's up to the individuals how they want to observe it. But the real way of doing it is of observing the Ekadasi starts actually on the Dasami day, the day before. And on Dasami day, one takes a vow in the morning that I am going to observe Ekadasi. And on Dasami day, he eats only once and doesn't eat after sunset. Right? Then on Ekadasi day, he fasts. Right? Fasts from water, stays up the whole night, and chant 64 rounds. Right? And then on Dwadasi day, he also eats once only.
Maharaj said that the spiritual master is supposed to connect the disciple with Iskan. But the scripture said the spiritual master connected the disciple with Krishna. Because if we develop this idea, we could, at the extreme, say there are no other Vaishnav or person in Krishna consciousness out of ISKCON. Could you clear that point?
Yeah, the thing is that what is ISKCON? Is ISKCON different from Krishna? What ISKCON actually stands for? The International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Right? Now, being in this International Society for Krishna Consciousness, we are actually getting a chance to become Krishna conscious. And being Krishna conscious means, you know, being with Krishna. Right? And at more ISKCON devotees, and this is the only bona fide sampradaya, we should not go out hunting for some other sampradaya. You know, like when you have your family, everything, your family is, you know, giving you all the satisfaction, then do you like to leave your home and go somebody else's house? No. You like to be in your house. Even if you go out sometimes, you always think, when am I going to go back home? Right? So that's how I think our devotees should feel. And the wise said Guru's duty is to link the disciples to ISKCON, because, you see, the Guru becomes a Guru being sanctioned by ISKCON. You see, all the Gurus in ISKCON are acting as a Guru because they have been given the permission by ISKCON. If ISKCON didn't give them the permission to initiate, they could not initiate. Right? So it is actually they are acting on behalf of ISKCON. So that's why my point was that, you know, the Guru should be loyal to the society and, you know, increase their disciples' faith on the society. Otherwise, what will happen, you know, like Guru will come, make some disciples, and then when he'll become considerably strong, then if he has some disagreement with ISKCON, he'll say, okay, my disciples should go with me. And that's what happened. When Jayatirtha left, you know, so many of his disciples left with him. When Hansadutta left, so many of his disciples left with him. Right? But, I mean, why? Because we taught the disciples that their only link is with the Guru and ISKCON didn't have any role to play. But now we have to make everyone understand, and we should understand ourselves also, that everybody has a spiritual responsibility towards ISKCON. Guru, disciple, all alike.
Maharaj, can you say the responsibility to ISKCON or to Vaishnava?
It's non-different. You can't separate ISKCON from Krishna. You can't separate ISKCON from Prabhupada. You can't separate Krishna from Prabhupada. You know, like, we have to understand that this is all put together. They are all linked with each other. Can ISKCON exist without Prabhupada? Can there be any ISKCON without Prabhupada? Or can there be Prabhupada without Krishna? You cannot. Cannot. Can there be Guru without Krishna?
Yes.
Yes? Well, there may be, I have my doubts actually. I mean, there are Vaishnavas, but I do not know how much we have to do with them. I don't think we have much to do with those Vaishnavas. Yes, we can offer them respect from a distance. But I know that my faith is in ISKCON. Now, without ISKCON, I do not have any identity. And I know that, I mean, I cannot continue my spiritual life outside. There may be other sampradayas. There may be even Gaudiya sampradayas. There may be many other moths. But I do not feel that I have, I'll be perfectly at home there. And also another doubt I have is, I'll say that this is very much my feeling. I do not want to say that this is, you know, everybody should feel that way, that's the law. My understanding is that This is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Right? It's an international society for Krishna Consciousness. And it is not just a society like that, which just, you know, Prabhupada just named. But we see the proof also. Mahaprabhu said that in every town and village the holy name will spread. Right? And although it appeared to be impossible, but it happened. Right? Now, did it happen by chance? Obviously not. Now, how can such an impossible thing happen just by chance? That by chance Prabhupada went to America, and by chance Prabhupada spread Krishna consciousness, and by chance people from all over the world started accepting it. Right? We have to understand that this is Mahaprabhu's plan. Mahaprabhu's prediction has been fulfilled by Mahaprabhu's arrangement. And the person who fulfilled it must be a very, very intimate associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, when such a person comes and accomplishes such a wonderful mission and sets up a society, you know, to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, and it is actually preaching Krishna consciousness all over the world so effectively. So now, if somebody is a genuine follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what do we expect him to do? Don't we expect that he should naturally line up with this society and help Mahaprabhu's movement spread all over the world? And if somebody does not, then what do we think? At least I think that something must be wrong with his Krishna consciousness. I mean, what to talk about the other Vaishnavas? I mean, I don't know whether you all do, but when I preach to the Western countries, to the Christians, I very boldly announce that had Jesus been here today, Jesus would have joined ISKCON. Why? Because Jesus loved God and Jesus wanted that everybody should receive the love of God. So the society that is actually doing that, so shouldn't he naturally feel inclined to become a part of it?
I was thinking about what you said when we discussed last time. You said about the spiritual master would be speak again in the GBC meeting and
oh my God. I didn't notice the water. Hare Krishna. Yeah.
And you said the GBC would take advice
Yeah. So what we'll do is, what we may do, it hasn't been decided that we will call them and take their advice, but we are considering taking their advice. After all, they have more experience, they have more knowledge. So we'll take their input. We'll find out what they want to say. Right? And then it is GBC who will make the decision. It's not that they'll make the decision for the GBC. We take the advice and then GBC makes the decision what should be the policy about reinitiation, or what should we do when the guru leaves the movement or guru falls down. What should the disciples do in that case? Yes. Yeah, right. The thing is that more important than association is actually service, right? And that's why we have this society where devotees are engaged in different services, right? And when you are in service, you can't move around freely because you have to, you know, in order to serve, you have to be fixed up in certain place, certain areas. So it is better that the more advanced devotees travel around and give association to the devotees all over the world. That's what is more appreciable, more likely than, you see, just devotees, you know, running around everywhere and looking for more advanced association. I mean, had there not been a society, and had we been so fixed up that we could have maintained our Krishna consciousness without the association, then probably it would have been possible. That's what used to happen in the past. The devotees used to travel, because they were fixed up. And they used to travel and search for association, and when they met some advanced devotee, you know, hear from him, associate with him. But nowadays, you see, the problem with us is that we are very weak. And this is the age of Kali. It's very strong. Maya is very strong. So if we are alone, then we may fall down. So that's why we remain secured in the association of the devotee. Okay, Hare Krishna. I think we've had a long class today. Jai Srila Prabhupada.